Okay, so we had the highly anticipated press conference from the crypto czar yesterday. And I guess you could say the markets were probably expecting a whole lot more, because the markets actually came down from about 100,000 to, well, I think the lowest that it was 96,223. And then what you can see is today, the markets haven't really been performing. But I think that the market actually missed out on the main parts of that speech. And I think that if you listened very carefully to that speech, not only was it a very, very, very bullish and a catalyst for crypto, but it actually also showed us exactly which altcoins were going to run. It was almost like David Sacks gave us the ultimate buy list for crypto tokens that you should be buying while he is the crypto czar. But you had to know what to listen for, and that's really what I want to spend time talking about today. I want to show you what David Sacks actually told us that we need to be buying if we're going to make money in the bull market. The other thing that we need to talk about is the fact that the market didn't move on the press conference yesterday actually gives us a very, very, very important and very interesting sign. And that is that the market is suffering from market fatigue or market exhaustion. And the problem with markets that have fatigue or exhaustion is that they can easily crash. And so you want to make sure that if the market does have fatigue and if the market is exhausted, you are in the correct tokens. And that's really what we're going to speak about today. David Sacks showed us what to get into. He also showed us that the market is exhausted. If the market is exhausted and you're in the wrong tokens, you're going to get rinsed. And today I'm going to protect you from that, and I'm going to show you exactly which tokens David Sacks told you to buy. So if that sounds good to you, all I need you guys to do is join the 1.154 million subscribers. Also obliterate the like button. And let's get this one on the road. A lot of people today were speaking about how boring the press conference was. You know what? I'll give it to you. The press conference was a little boring, but I'll tell you another thing. The Banter community showed up. I don't know if you guys saw this yesterday. We had 21,479 people at the peak at watching our show at one time. And we had a total of 78,459 people that watched the show while the show was actually live, which, by the way, was much bigger than the actual press conference. Like, if you look at the actual press conference, they've only got 68,000 views now. We've got over 100,000, 120,000 views on our show. So we can clearly see which are the strongest crypto communities in the world. And this is definitely one of the strongest communities in the world. Felt really, really, really amazing being there, watching it and seeing 21,500 live people. It's the second biggest show we've ever done on Banter. The first time we had that those kind of numbers was like in the previous bull market when the whole market collapsed and no one knew what was going on. So very, very, very proud of you all. For those of you who were there, I think it was quite a bit of fun. We made the most of what was at face value a very, very, very boring press conference. But afterwards, I had some time to reflect, and I think I really decoded exactly how bullish the press conference actually was, and exactly what tokens David Sacks actually told us to buy, because he actually gave us a massive buy list. So if you were there last night, well done. Thank you. It was amazing. We'll keep bringing you these things. It was so good to see 21,500 people. If you were there, just smash the like button. Let me know that you guys were actually there. Someone says, I like the shirt. Josh also actually commented on the shirt. Oh, it's Theo. It's Theo commenting on my shirt. So you see, Josh, you and Theo can actually agree every now and then, hey? You don't always disagree. You see, as long as it's anonymous, you guys actually agree. You all agree. All right, so let's actually talk about what actually happened last night. And again, I'll give it to you. It was a little bit boring at face value. These guys, I mean, you could say that they're not like the A-team when it comes to the speakers. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't take these guys into like a speaking function with me.
Digital assets. The president said in his...
But anyway, these are the guys we're dealing with. And I think, to be honest, the first thing that we really, really, really have to celebrate is that the fact that we are in 2025, we've had 10 or 8 hostile years in crypto in the United States. And now we actually have an astute task team in the White House, in the Senate, all talking about digital assets. If that doesn't sound exciting to you, then I just have to remind you where we were before November 5th. We literally had a bunch of people who were so anti-crypto, all hating on everything that we did. Now you have a press conference that's actually being done. I mean, we've got to start at the absolute basics. And I think I don't agree with Brad Garlinghouse much, But I do agree with him. He says any criticism of today's press conference is absolutely missing the forest for the trees. Having a chair of the Senate Banking, a chair of the House Financial Service, a chair of a Senate Agriculture, and a chair of the House Agriculture join the crypto czar in crypto legislation is like a massive, massive, massive big deal. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. I also don't think that we should lose sight of exactly the approach that they took. I don't know what people were expecting, but I did warn you on yesterday's show. They haven't had enough time to actually implement any changes. Like they haven't. These guys, some of them aren't even sworn in yet. They're not going to implement changes on the first day. But let me tell you another thing. I was absolutely, absolutely blown away by the approach and the magnitude of what they are actually trying to do. And that's, I think, the part that the entire market missed out on. I think that everyone was so worried about, can you pump my bags? Can you pump my bags? Can you get Bitcoin to 110,000? Can you get the altcoins running? That everybody missed the magnitude of what these guys were actually doing. And I think this show, I want to just give you some kind of perspective on the magnitude of what the hell actually went on there last night. So the first thing that should highlight to you that these guys are serious and much, much, much more serious than, hey, bro, pump my altcoin bag, or hey, bro, even a Bitcoin strategic reserve, was actually in this statement over here.
Stablecoins really have the potential to ensure American dollar dominance internationally, to increase the usage of the U.S. dollar digitally as the world's reserve currency, and in the process create potentially trillions of dollars of demand for U.S. treasuries, which could lower long-term interest rates.
Listen to that again. They want to make the U.S. dollar the dominant currency on the blockchain. And the reason why they do that is because they want dollar dominance and they want people buying U.S. treasuries. The U.S. has acknowledged and realized that the way to win in blockchain is to make your currency the ultimate fiat currency on the blockchain. And that is the first point that they're actually attacking, and they're attacking it systematically. They are going for stablecoins, and they are doing this because they realize that the dollar is a more effective weapon than actual weapons. They know that if they can get dollar dominance on blockchain, then most trade in the world will be dollar denominated, and that US treasuries, which give dollar-based returns, will be the most wanted treasuries in the world. And if that happens, the US becomes or remains the superpower in the world of Web3, or the Web2 superpower in the world of Web3. Don't underestimate how big this is. And I saw a little part where he says, the U.S. doesn't just run on military strength. It runs on the dollar. For decades, the dollar has been America's greatest weapon, and it's used to settle global trade, store reserves, and enforce sanctions. If the U.S. has now acknowledged that if it does not win on the blockchain, it's going to lose its place as the global reserve currency and the strongest nation in the world. And so what they've done is they've been very, very, very smart. They're saying, look, we don't care about anything else. The first thing that we have to do, we have to put in stablecoin regulation. And that stablecoin regulation has to make sure that the dollar is the most important currency on the blockchain. And that way the United States can actually win on stablecoins. Now, you got to remember another thing. Getting more stables onto the blockchain is the most important thing that we can do. Because without more dollars on the blockchain, there is no one to buy your altcoin bags. If there's no money on the blockchain, there's no one to actually buy your bags. And so you can put everything else in place, but if there's no way to onboard money safely or in a regulated way, if there's no way to onboard US dollars, there's just no way to actually buy your tokens. And so this is probably the most important fundamental piece of regulation and legislation, is to legislate and to regulate stablecoins so that we can bring more liquidity onto blockchain. Because right now there's two sources of liquidity onto blockchain. The one is stablecoins, right? People buying tokens in stablecoins. And the other one is people buying Bitcoin or ETFs buying Bitcoin off holders, giving them USDC or USDT stablecoins to buy the other bags. And so, yes, I know that, we can't get really excited about stablecoins. But ultimately, if there's no stablecoins, there ain't liquidity on chain. And so this is the most fundamental challenge and the most fundamental problem that we all have to solve. We have to get more US dollars onto chain. That's only going to happen when there's stablecoin regulation. When there's stablecoin regulation, the banks will be able to transact and to onboard their users onto chain. Then we'll have a whole lot of liquidity on chain. And then that liquidity can flow into a whole lot of different assets, where right now that's not even an option. So yeah, stablecoins were a very big deal in 2024, you can see. Stablecoins transactions value surpassed Visa and MasterCard in 2024. In fact, I've got some more stats here. According to ARK Invest, the transaction volume of stablecoins hit 15.6 trillion, roughly 119% of that of Visa. Okay, so you can see how important stablecoins were in 2024, and they were unregulated. Imagine what happens in 2025 when they do get regulated. And so the first thing that we have to appreciate is how big they've gone for the biggest play. How can we win by making our currency the most important currency when it comes to blockchain and making sure other nations don't get that position? So that's the first thing that you have to appreciate. The second thing, which I think people missed, was this.
One of the things that the president instructed us to do was to evaluate the idea for a Bitcoin reserve. And so that is one of the things, that's one of the first things we're going to look at as part of the internal working group in the administration. So as soon as we get all that set up, we're still waiting for some cabinet secretaries who are on the working group to get confirmed. So we're still in the very early stages of this. But that's one of the first things we're going to look at.
One of the first things we're going to look at is a Bitcoin strategic reserve. We're not kicking it down the road. We're not doing it in a year or 2 years. We're just waiting for everyone to get confirmed. And then we're going to do a Bitcoin strategic reserve. That's big. Like he's saying one of the first things we're going to do. First thing we're going to do, regulate stablecoins. One of the first things we're going to do is do a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Then they spoke about the sovereign wealth fund. And David Sacks pretty much said, he said, look, the sovereign wealth fund, I think it's actually part of this. Let's just see if it carries on.
Feasibility of a Bitcoin reserve. I think the concept of the sovereign wealth fund is a little separate, and you'd have to talk to Secretary Lutnick, or soon to be Secretary Lutnick, about that.
So what is he saying? He's saying, look, originally there was going to be one buyer of Bitcoin on the market, and that one buyer of Bitcoin was going to be the Bitcoin strategic reserve. And that, by the way, is one of their first priorities. But then he introduced a second buyer of not only Bitcoin, but probably crypto. And that is the sovereign wealth fund. So now you're in a position where you've got two unique buyers, where before we only had one buyer. Before, the only buyer was the Bitcoin strategic reserve. Now you've potentially got two buyers. The Bitcoin strategic reserve is very much a priority for them. But now you have a second buyer, which is the sovereign wealth fund. And the sovereign wealth fund could easily invest in Bitcoin and could easily invest in altcoins and could easily invest in crypto infrastructure projects. This sovereign wealth fund, which is the new buyer that's on the block, that, by the way, a week ago wasn't even in existence, is run by two absolute Bitcoin degens, okay? This guy over here, Howard Lutnick, he owns 5% of Tether. He owns millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. And then you've got Scott Bessent, who owns at least $500,000 worth of Bitcoin. So instead of having one buyer, you've now got two buyers, and the US is going for complete and full domination of blockchain money. Then you've got to appreciate the speed at which these people are actually moving at. Like the old regime wouldn't move at all. And now we have a regime that's kind of committing to have clear industry regulations within 6 months.
Talk about the need for this clear regulatory framework. How quickly can you stand this up?
Well, I was on the Hill today meeting with the leaders of our House and Senate committees for banking and for finance, and they are very committed to moving legislation through the House and the Senate this year in order to provide that clear regulatory framework that the digital assets ecosystem needs to sustain innovation in the United States. And so those chairmen, I think, are very committed. President Trump is committed.
Okay, so next 6 months, we're going to get it. He said to keep it in the United States. Remember those words, because we're going to talk about those words, because that's where the David Sacks buy list actually comes in. He said to keep innovation in the United States, to make United States the leader. Okay, so the other thing that we need to celebrate is that this administration has a motto, and their motto is promises made, promises kept. They made us a promise, and they're keeping the promises. And to that end, the SEC has also already launched a crypto task force website. Hester Peirce, who's now head of the SEC crypto task force, has literally laid out a full manifest of exactly what she's going to do and what she's going to address and when she's going to address it. First, security status, what is a coin and token offering, what's a registered offering, and literally laid down a plan for exactly what they're going to do. And at the same time, what they've done is they've cut back on their crypto enforcement unit. 50 lawyers and staff have been laid off, basically. These guys are basically scaling back on their crypto enforcement. Okay, so this administration is really, really, really delivering. And to be honest, I think that the problem is actually not in the news, but I think that the problem actually lies in the market. And this is a very serious problem that I want to address with you guys. So if you look at the market, we've pretty much had a whole lot of really, really, really good news. None of the good news is actually moving the market. The market is not moving on good news, but the market is moving on bad news. So when we got news of Strategic Reserve, crypto czar talking about stuff like that, that ain't moving the market anymore. What is moving the market right now is negative news. When we got the tariff news, the markets moved, and the markets moved down pretty sharply. In fact, the markets cascaded into liquidations. This is a very serious problem, and we need to talk about the problem. I know it's not a problem that everybody wants to talk about, because you just want me to come onto the YouTube stream and be bullish, 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 and tell you how much the market's going to go up and how we're going to the moon. But I'm not going to do that today, because it's not true. Because there is a problem with this market now. This market is actually suffering from what they call market exhaustion. It's a real term. Now, market exhaustion is not about being tired. Like, it's not tired like you know, when someone is tired. Market exhaustion is when the assets that can push a market up have been exhausted or depleted. So when you get to a point where the market does not respond to good news anymore, then you're in a point where you're saying that the assets which are used to push a market up have been depleted to the point where they're now exhausted. And that is what we're currently going through. And the sign for that is when you get a market that doesn't respond on good news, then the market is depleted or exhausted. If the market responds very, very, very badly to bad news, which is exactly what we saw 2 or 3 days ago, then you're in a worse point than market depletion. You're in a point of market exhaustion. Okay, what does that mean? When the market speed or the market momentum is being depleted, what you'll realize is that the rises aren't as aggressive anymore. And you'll agree with me that for a long time, we haven't had an aggressive rise in market pricing at all, right? We just haven't had an aggressive move in markets. The most that we can do is we managed to move Bitcoin from 91 to 106. We haven't had a massive move in the market. And the reason why that's happening is because all the people that wanted to invest, all the assets that wanted to come into the market to move the market up are depleted and the market is exhausted. And to make things worse, when the market actually responds very badly to bad news, what it means is that the market not only has been depleted, but we have gone beyond the point of depletion where people are actually borrowing money to try and push the market up. And that's what happens when we get high leverage. If you add a scenario where the market is exhausted and people are now borrowing money to get into the market and getting liquidated in situations like we had the other day, every time that there's bad news, then you have a market structure problem. And to be honest, we have a market structure problem at the moment. And the reason why is right now, all the players that wanted to come in or wanted to be deployed on crypto good news are fully deployed and maybe over-deployed, and we're completely wiped in the last couple of days. That is the reality of where we're at. So when we get all this good news and the market doesn't move, you got to say to yourself, okay, hold on, there's a market structure problem here. The market has become numb to good news. One year ago, if you were told we'd have a government do a press conference and saying the golden age of crypto is coming, you'd be euphoric. We went down. Yeah, we went down. This is a problem. You have to be able to read between the lines. And it's not only a problem of market exhaustion, it's also a problem of market exhaustion plus 37 million tokens in circulation on the market, right? There's literally 37 million tokens out there on the market right now. And so that's why, on top of the fact that you've got no more money coming into the market, you've got new tokens launching all the time, we then have to deal with a big problem of the old token unlocks coming to haunt us in this cycle. You got a perfect storm here. Like you have to understand where we're at with the market. No more money to push the market back up. A whole lot of new tokens launching every 25 seconds, like Pump.fun and AI agents just launching, stealing liquidity. And then, by the way, as if we didn't have enough problems, $75 billion in token unlocks expected to happen in 2025, and 61 billion token, billion dollars. Just understand. I want to give you perspective. And I know you don't want to hear this, and I know that you're not going to like the show. I know you're not going to share it. If you take the total amount of US dollar inflows that have come in since 2020, since the bottom, $100 billion has flowed into the market since the bottom of the market. $100 billion in USDT have flowed into the market in a bull market. Guys, we have $74 billion in token unlocks, which are coming into the market, and $61 billion coming out in 2026. Okay, there is a market structure problem. There is a massive market structure problem. And so I think the idea that we're going to have an old season, forget about it. Like, if you really think that there's going to be, with that market structure and that market dynamics, if you really think that there's going to be this crazy old season where every single altcoin runs, you're dreaming. That is a phenomenon from last cycle, where it was very, very, very hard to create tokens and where everybody wanted to FOMO into the tokens. That's not the market structure nowadays. And so I've got to be honest, if you're sitting around and you're waiting for this magical thing called alt season, where all of your old alts that don't have any, that don't have product market fit, don't have users, don't have revenue, are going to start running, you're going to be waiting a really, really, really long time. And someone says that the reality is hard to digest. To be honest, this wasn't part of the show that I actually wanted to do today, but I think we just have to have a heart-to-heart here, because everyone's still thinking about alt season. Guys, alt season ain't coming anymore. I did a show a while back. I got all the hate where you all said to me, "Oh, how can you say there's no alt season?" The alt season, like the alt season that we had last cycle, ain't never coming again. What you need to do is you need to think about the new types of alt season that you're going to get. And the new types of alt season, it is mathematically impossible for all tokens to continue to go up in a world where so many tokens are launching every 2 seconds and where $130 billion of old tokens that have already launched are still flowing into the market. And if you disagree with that, then to be honest, you're watching the wrong channel, because this is logic. This is math. Josh, do you agree with this? Andre, do you agree with this?
I made the show, so yes.
You made the show. You need to agree. We need to just come to the realization that this is what it's about. Because if you're sitting here and you're waiting for 2021 or 2017 type old season, it's not going to happen. I don't care how much your favorite influencers tell you it's going to happen. I don't care how much they all jump on and say, alt season's coming in a month, alt season's coming in. Alt season's been coming for many months and it just never came. It just never, ever, ever came. Now you got to deal with the reality. The reality is this market is starting to be like a normal market. What is a normal market like? Not everything runs at once. Clusters run. Narratives run. Money flows from one cluster to another cluster. Money flows in a little bit more slowly. You know, the difference between this and normal markets is normal markets are regulated. When a regulated market, it's very hard for tokens to launch. In an unregulated market, every monkey can launch 8,000 billion tokens on Pump. AIs can launch tokens on Pump.fun. And you've got to ask yourself a question. Where is the money going to come from? Where are the inflows going to come from? Because let me tell you, my friends, there's only a few sources of money that can flow into this market. The first flow of money that can flow into this market is, funny enough, from the FTX people. There's $6 to $7 billion which are going to start hitting the markets and in February. That is one source of money that could flow into the market and actually could give us a little bit of a rise. Because these FTX people, these are the sub 50, the people that had less than $50,000 in FTX, it's these guys. It's their money that's starting to come onto the market. The next flow of money. Now, this is super important that you actually understand this. It's going to be a slightly longer show today. Is money that comes into the ETFs. And the reason is because this is very important that you understand this principle. In the last cycle, money used to flow into Bitcoin. And the money that used to flow into Bitcoin used to then filter down to altcoins. And the reason why that happened was because the subset of crypto buyers was people that could move down the risk curve or up the risk curve, down the altcoin curve. They can't do that anymore. This money that's coming into the ETFs isn't flowing into crypto. It is staying in Bitcoin because it's institutional money that can't move down to Solana. It can't move down to Solana. It can't move down to all the other assets. So this money that's coming into the market, only a very small percentage of it is Bitcoiners selling their tokens to actually buy altcoins. The rest is just Bitcoiners buying and selling from each other. That's it. And that money is trapped in an ecosystem called Bitcoin. And that's why there's no more volatility on Bitcoin, because Bitcoin doesn't move up or down like it used to, because it's part of an institutional bunch of assets. So where's money going to come into the market? Number one, from the FTX. Number two, it's going to come in from stablecoin inflows. Which problem has the US decided to tackle first? Stablecoin inflows. Simple maths. The quicker we can get the stablecoin regulation, the quicker we can get more stablecoins onto the chain, the quicker this market can actually go up. When it does go up, not everything's going to go up. And until it goes up, not everything's going to go up. When it does go up, certain things are going to go up. What's going to go up? Well, you're going to get a lot of narratives. But there's certain things that are definitely, probably not definitely, you can't say it, you're not allowed to say it definitely. I want to just show you. This is, Miles posted a tweet. Look at, this is a bull market pullbacks, this bull market, guys. Memes are down 80%+. Layer 2s are down 80%+. DeFi protocols are down, SUSE's down 96%. AI agents down 90%. This is what happens when you have a broken market structure. Now look, I know I'd get a lot more views if I told you that alt season's coming next week. And I know I'd get a lot more views if I told you that you should be buying all these tokens because alt season's going to come next week. But I have to give it to you straight. There ain't no alt season, and the alt season ain't coming. You will get alts that are going to run, and they'll run much, much, much more aggressive than Bitcoin. But you have to have your finger on the pulse in terms of which tokens these are and which tokens they're not. And this is the point. Last night, David Sacks basically gave you a blueprint. What did he say? He said, we are addressing stablecoins first. No, first of all, he said, we are launching a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Ding, 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 ding. What coin is that going to be good for? Bitcoin. Have Bitcoin in your portfolio. This is not a season where you want to be altcoin heavy. This is a season where you want to be Bitcoin heavy. Why do you want to be Bitcoin heavy? Because there's going to be a strategic Bitcoin reserve. There's going to be other countries buying Bitcoin. You want to be in Bitcoin. End of story. This is not the cycle to be playing in a lot of altcoins. Not yet. What else did he say? He said, we are starting stablecoin. We are going to go heavy into stablecoins, and we're going to make this a priority, and the US is going to win on stablecoins on chain. You need to be in stablecoins. Unfortunately, you can't invest in stablecoins. Why? Because you can't invest in Tether. Only Howard Lutnick can, because they probably worked out that he was going to be in government, and the guy said, well, that's my, you know, Tether's currently like almost banned in the United States. Well, you know what, if we get like Howard Lutnick on our board, chances are we can go back to the United States. You can't invest in Circle. So you're left to talk about stablecoin infrastructure. I only know two stablecoin infrastructures. And when I say stablecoin, I don't mean Athena type yield bearing stablecoins or usual money type usual yield bearing stablecoins. I mean stablecoins that are backed one-to-one with the US dollar, backed one-to-one, not pegged to the dollar. Two different types of stablecoin. One type of stablecoin is backed one-to-one with treasury bonds or treasury instruments. The other one is a yield instrument, like Athena is a yield instrument pegged to a dollar. Usual money is a yield instrument pegged to a dollar. USDT and USDC are dollar-backed stablecoins. Very, very, very different. You can't invest in those. There are two players that I know of that you can invest. One of them is Curve and one of them is Convex. Why? Because Curve is an exchange where people can swap from stablecoin to stablecoin. It's not ideal. It's not like investing in Tether. It's not that. But it's the only play that I know of if you want to play in stablecoins. That's it, unfortunately. So we can buy Bitcoin. We cannot own too many stablecoins. However, when stablecoins come onto the chain, this is a very good tweet. It said, "We are truly on the brink of a very exciting wave of crypto going mainstream, which will be ushered in by the Bipartisan Stablecoin Act, outlining onshore operations for US stablecoin issuers. Over the next decades, trillions of dollars will be tokenized and traded on public blockchains, which is huge for public blockchains." Now, when these trillions of dollars actually land up on the blockchain, what are they going to be doing with those dollars? The first thing they're going to be doing is they're going to be making payments, right? So think about this. I'm sitting on my own microphone here. Hold on a second. Okay, that should be a bit better. So what are these payments, what are these stable coins going to be doing on chain? So the US has told you, we're going to put billions and trillions of dollars on chain. What are people going to be doing with those things on chain? The first thing they're going to be doing is payments. I'm going to pay you, you're going to pay me, you're going to send money to the Philippines. People aren't going to use things like Western Union anymore or everything else, right? Because those are inefficient ways of sending money. Do you know in South Africa, I'll tell you a story. In South Africa, there's a lot of people that come illegally from Zimbabwe, right? Zimbabwe is like our neighboring country. And you know that Zimbabwe uses US dollars. South Africa, people from Zimbabwe send money, that work in South Africa, send money to Zimbabwe from South Africa. Do you know how they do it? They meet a cab driver. They give him the money. A lot of people pull their money. The guy drives, and then maybe, and maybe not, he delivers the money to whoever's supposed to deliver the money to. No jokes. That's how it works. Okay, we need blockchain. We need it fast. So it's either going to be stable coins or it's going to be people wanting to invest to make returns on their US dollars, and they're going to want to do it on the blockchain. Those are two uses for stable coins, right? Either you're going to use it as a form of payment. I pay you, you pay me, or you're going to want to get investment. And so what this means is that we can expect very, very, very quickly that there's going to be a massive real-world asset narrative on the blockchain. First step is get the stablecoin regulation in. Once the stablecoin regulation is in, all the dollars move to the blockchain. Once the dollars are on the blockchain, they need to invest in blockchain investments. Those are called real-world asset investment on the blockchain. Larry Fink has been talking about it forever. He spoke about it again in Davos this last week before.
As a huge believer of crypto and blockchain, and tokenization, I want the SEC to rapidly approve the tokenization of bonds and stocks.
Tokenization of bonds and stocks. Putting real money's going to be sitting on chain. Just think about it like this. Stablecoin Act gets approved. US dollars move onto chain. Money's going to be living on the chain. Money's going to need to be invested on chain. Where's it going to be invested into? Tokenized real world assets. That's going to be by far the biggest narrative by a country mile in crypto. Now, I know you're probably saying, well, I don't really want to invest in tokenized stocks or tokenized treasuries on chain. That's great. I also don't want to. But I want to invest in the infrastructure that's going to allow people to do this. I don't really care about earning 5% on a treasury yield. But let me tell you, there's trillions of dollars. In fact, there's $6 trillion, right? Sorry, $11 trillion in money market assets in the States that want to invest in 5% treasury bonds on chain. Okay? Not interesting to you, not interesting to me. But interesting if we can invest in the infrastructure where the people are going to do it. Everyone is talking about it. Jeremy Allaire did this presentation, the tokenization of everything. He did this in 2018, believe it or not. And now it's actually starting to come to it. And so what you're seeing is a massive, massive, massive rise in real world assets. Why? Trump wins the elections. After Trump wins the elections, people start realizing that people are going to get very serious about blockchain. And being serious about blockchain means being serious about putting real world assets onto the chain. It's going to be the fastest and the biggest play in blockchain, other than Bitcoin, for the next 10 years is going to be migrating real-world assets onto the chain, tokenizing real-world assets onto the chain. This is a real narrative. It's not meme coins. It's not AI agents. It's actually happening. And you can see that the market cap of real-world asset tokens has gone up from September 23, $2 billion, to today, $62 billion. This is definitely happening. And if you look at the sector performance for the year to date, which is this year, the sector performance year to date, the best performing sector this year has actually been real world assets. And I think it's just the beginning. And so I think this is also going to be pushed much harder next week, or not actually next week, it's later this week, when we have the Ondo Finance Summit. Why? Because what you're starting to realize is that everybody from BlackRock to Chairman Patrick McHenry to Franklin Templeton to Dan Moorhead to Mike Novogratz are all going to go and talk about real world assets in New York next week. And that we spoke about this before, and that's why I told you there's going to be a run on real world assets, but I think it's just starting. And I think when you have the billions of dollars on chain, then that's what's going to happen. So how do you invest in real world assets? It's not something that I'm going to cover everything on this show, because that would be like me trying to teach you everything of the biggest sector in blockchain in one show. But I think you have to understand the basics of it. And the basics are pretty simple. Number one, what you need to understand is that there are multiple ways to invest in real world assets. The first way to do it, and the most basic way to do it, is to invest in the blockchains that are going to house these real world asset transactions, right? And I mean, of course you can say, okay, well, like, what are the blockchains that are going to do it? So, I mean, the basic blockchains. So if you look at the basic blockchains, you can see that like ETH and Sol and they all have real world assets on chain. Obviously, ETH has the majority of the real world assets actually on chain, but not all real world assets are going to be on the existing chains, right? Because what you're going to get is you're going to get a bunch of specialized chains which focus only on real world assets. These are the more compliant chains. These are the chains that the banks can use. These are chains that can be regionally compliant, right? And so some real world assets are going to live on Ethereum and they're going to live on Solana, but other real world assets are going to live on specialized chains that actually happens. And just read it says, back of the napkin maths, if all major asset classes get tokenized and trade on chain, then the chain should be worth about $1 trillion, okay? If prices spike like equities. So Kyle Samani said, internet capital market, sir. And that's exactly what it is. So how do you invest it? Well, you can hold ETH. You can hold Solana, because right now ETH is the winner and Solana is the second when it comes to real world assets. Or you can start holding the more niche real world asset chains. So I'll give you some examples. One of them is a derivative of a project called Clearpool. You all know it as Clearpool, but they are launching a blockchain called Ozian. Ozian is their blockchain play. It says the Ozian solution tackles challenges by creating a unified RWA-focused ecosystem that seamlessly collects traditional finance into DeFi. So what you'll realize is that Clearpool, let's just be clear, I actually have no idea what the market cap is, and I am an investor in this. I'm an investor in probably most of these real-world assets. So Clearpool has a market cap of $250 million. Here it is. This is one, a specialized one. Another specialized one is one that you know we're invested in, Mantra. It's been one of our best performing tokens. Remember that what David Sachs said, he said, we want America. Sorry, I lost my microphone down my shirt. Okay. David Sachs said that he wants America to win. If you look at Mantra, Mantra is a layer one blockchain for real world assets. And traditionally, a Mantra has been very much in the Middle East or in the East. So it's been partnered up with DMACC, and it's really been partnered up within the Emirates and in the East. But look, a little birdie told me a little secret, right? A little birdie told me that they're making massive, massive, massive strides now to get into the United States and to align themselves with US-specific players. So you've got, again, you want to invest in real-world assets, invest in the chains. On top of investing in the chains, you can then look at investing in the tokenization and trading platforms. So remember, there's a chain where you trade, or where you put the asset, right? But then there's like platforms that actually allow you to tokenize. So for example, if you look at Ondo allows you to trade multiple different blockchain assets. So for example, you can trade on-chain shares on Ondo. These guys tokenize on-chain assets. So you can trade Tesla, you can put real world assets in your portfolio using a platform like Ondo. And Ondo, as I said, is having its event. Let's quickly see what the market cap of Ondo actually is. So Ondo is another one of those that you can look at. 4.3 billion market cap, 13 billion for you. It's quite expensive for me, but who knows? So that's Ondo. But Ondo is not the only one. So there's a protocol called Chex or Chinta. We've spoken about it before. But what they have is they have a platform where anybody who has a real-world asset narrative and wants to tokenize it, basically tokenize it like in a, almost like in a pump.fun kind of thing where you can tokenize whatever assets you want and you can have them on their platform. And it's a very, very, very good protocol. Lots of partnerships. They've announced partnership after partnership. Price flying. Absolutely, absolutely flying. This thing's just going up and up and up. But again, this is another one of these platforms that allows you to tokenize things. Then you can get into specialist play like Pendle. Why is Pendle so important? Because Pendle, what it basically does is it separates yield from principal and you can trade in the yield. And that's a massive thing in real world asset markets. It's interest rate trading. And it's massive, massive, massive in interest rate markets. And Pendle is probably the market leader when it comes to that. All right. And we will go deeper into all of these as time goes by. The other thing that you need to look at is you need to look at the cross-chain protocols. Now, the reason why I say you need to look at the cross-chain protocols is because imagine that there's an asset on ETH and some assets on Sol. And you need to move the assets across chain to be able to trade these assets, right? So the cross-chain protocols are going to become super, super, super important when that happens. And if I think of the cross-chain protocols, there's really two that really, really, really stick out for me. The first one is Wormhole. The reason why I think Wormhole is so good, Wormhole is a cross-chain protocol, but it's US-based. It was developed by Jump in the United States. It's got the US partnerships. It's got a partnership with Securitize. It's got the and thereby a partnership with BlackRock. It does a whole lot of US partnerships. From a technological point of view, I actually think that Axelar is a lot better than Wormhole, to be honest. They may not have as many partnerships yet, but from a pure technological point of view, Axelar is a much, much, much better, much more decentralized cross-chain protocol. And you need these cross-chain protocols to be able to operate in the real-world asset world. So I think very, very soon, these cross-chain protocols have been hit very, very, very hard, but they're going to have their day and they're going to last for multi-cycles and they have to do that. The next thing that you need to invest in is the oracles. We need to speak about the oracles. And the reason why I need to speak about the oracles is because remember, with all this on-chain trading, people need to know what the price is. And what's the price? Well, you can only get that from Chainlink or you can get that from Pith. And so you need to look at the oracles to actually start investing. So I think that what's super important is that you understand that David Sacks basically said, we're going to bring stable coins onto chain. We're going to make the US dollar the most potent currency in the world on chain. And in the day and on the day when that happens, people are going to start looking for yield and they're going to get the yield and the returns by investing in tokenized real world assets on chain. That's a narrative that's going to be up for the next 5 years. And if you're investing now, you're really, really, really investing in the grassroots of this level. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about real world assets. But I think today, the point of it was, the point of today was just to show you that David Sacks, even though the press conference seemed boring, he actually did lay out for us a roadmap of exactly which tokens are going to run and when they're going to run. And I think that the market just didn't realize how powerful what he actually said was. Anyway, that's me for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I was obviously very transparent, very brutally honest with you guys. And I hope that you take the message with you guys. I'll see you guys again tomorrow. Till then, trade well, my friends.